Kia ora. I don't intend to discuss details of the resources expropriated from Latin America, and I'm very pleased that the previous speakers have dealt with these subjects quite well. But looking at the geopolitical scene, I might mention that if you're looking at the history of Latin America, no better read than The Open Veins of Latin America by Eduardo Galeano, 5 centuries of a pillage of a continent. And of course, of bringing you up to date is Chomsky's Washington Connection. The political direction of Latin America over the last century has been determined to a large extent by commercial interests of the superpower to the north. I've just made very quickly this slide just to give you an idea of the broad ambit of the way that you can destabilize a state. We have US aid used in, with business-friendly unions and to support right-wing movements. And the media, takeover of the media outlets, disinformation, anti-socialist propaganda, economic denial of credit, redirection of drug money, bribery, support right-wing-led strikes, and biological weapons used against Cuba, sabotage of crops with pests and diseases, and of course, more recently, the IMF, the World Bank, WTO, and the free trade agreements. Military then used intelligence. Ex-Nazis from Germany were placed strategically, best known Klaus Barbie in Bolivia. People were paid, like Montesinos in Peru, and Noriega in Panama. The training of military and police in the US School of Americas, more than 80,000 people. Support to sympathetic generals, assassination, sabotage, the mining the ports in Nicaragua, and then the military coup, military intervention, direct invasion. Many of these people involved with are well known, like Kissinger, who set up the Condor Network and was asked to investigate what happened in the 11th of September events. Of course, people wondered why they should ask him. The new American century, early in February on the day that George Bush delivered his State of the Union address, the Pentagon received a visitor. A few hours before, the president told the American people that we will not permit the triumph of violence in the fears of men. General Carlos Ospina, head of the Colombian Army, was shaking hands with his American counterpart. Is this unusual? No. But this time, Human Rights Watch had very detailed documentation of massacres committed by paramilitary death squads and a brigade under Ospina's command. General Ospina had come to discuss the latest installment of US military aid. The general also revealed that the Colombian government is now deploying a new kind of self-defense force, armed civilians backed by the army. Actually, it's an effective legalization of the death squads, the paramilitaries that already exist. Last year, over 8,000 political assassinations were committed in Colombia, 80% of these murders committed by paramilitary groups. 3 out of 4 trade union activists murdered worldwide are killed by the Colombian paramilitaries, while 2.5 million people have been forcibly displaced from their homes. The US has been at war in Colombia for 50 years. Officially, it is now involved in a war on terror. Before September 2001, it was a war on drugs. Before that, a war on communism. In essence, US intervention in Colombia is unchanged, a war on the poor on behalf of its rich. And today, of course, access to oil. In February, the US House and Senate approved the US federal budget for this year. No amendments on Colombia aid was allowed, and there was no debate. The new bill includes $773 million American dollars, mostly from military funds, with $88 million set aside to train the Colombian military to guard better, more effectively, the oil pipeline owned by Occidental Petroleum, a company the indigenous people, the Uwa, have fought for decades to get off their land. There's not much time, but many of you will know the national security strategy that President Bush presented, and that's a plan for permanent US military and economic domination of every region of the globe. And of course, oil is part of this, and Colombia and Venezuela in particular figure in, but many other countries have oil, but not so much. All is going to plan. In Venezuela, the US has been going for regime change through the classic destabilization techniques used 30 years earlier against Salvador Allende. But nationalist President Hugo Chavez has successfully forestalled both the US-backed coup and a general strike by oil executives and some businesses. In Colombia, the rebel forces, FARC, are holding their own, And in the United States, more than 100 organisations making up the National Mobilisation on Colombia are working to challenge corporate practices in that country. And a march is planned for March the 24th, just next week. To go on to the neoliberal project, which is part of the scene today, George Bush Sr. told a conference in 1989 that commitment to democracy was only one element he envisaged. What had to be guaranteed first was that the market economy prevailed. Latin America has indeed paid a high price for being favoured test zone for neoliberal experiments. The number of people living below poverty threshold increased from 120 million to 214 million over the last two decades. The left seemed defeated. However, Latin American functions as a school of crime, Galeano said. The school's principle is called social injustice, and among its main teachers is one called impunity of power and another called consumer society. Chile had a strong tradition of elections dating back to the 1800s. In the early 70s, Salvador Allende was elected at the head of a mass movement for land reform and nationalisation of the copper industry. It was not to be. The US, threatened by this attempt at direct democracy, strangled the economy and supported a brutal military coup. Chile, with its long tradition of struggle for economic and social rights and its history of democracy, spearheaded the neoliberal project, and Pinochet's repression destroyed the structure that made Chile a point of reference. The militarization of Brazil also fitted the US doctrine of national security, as did that of Uruguay. The devastating wars against communism in Nicaragua, El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala were followed by the application of the equally devastating free market reforms. I had the pleasure of visiting Buenos Aires 2 years ago on the way to the World Social Forum, the first one. Si la vida que vivimos no es digna, la dignidad es luchar para cambiarlo. And that's what it says. If the life that we live is not dignified, the dignified thing to do is to fight to change it. So the Argentinians are massively disillusioned and alienated from their government, with an economy dominated by foreign-owned corporates, payola and impunity. And in Argentina, Carlos Menem would never have had a government without the destruction of the left, followed by the so-called dirty war. Trained, armed and financed by Washington, the Argentine military carried out their murderous instructions they had got from the Pentagon schools. I just wanted to dwell a little on Argentina. Once upon a time, there was a country called Argentina, writes journalist Sergio Cincaglini, where many people disappeared and where, years later, the money disappeared too. One thing is related to the other. Naomi Klone has written a really good article on this. Just to quote a few of her points, 76 to 83, Argentina was ruled by the twisted military regime that saw their mission to cleanse Marxist and other subversive thought from every school, workplace, church and neighbourhood. After pardoning the generals in 1989, Menem launched a zealous program of mass privatizations, public sector layoffs. Oh, you know the rest. And Bush, favorite corporate Enron, picked up a lot of business here, including an oil pipeline through his very personal intervention. That is Bush Jr. today. The wealth flowing in the 90s Argentina was a combination of speculative finance and one-off sales. The phone company, oil company, rails, the airline. After the initial cash infusion and greased palms, what was left was a hollowed out country. Costly basic service in a working class that wasn't working. It left a financial sector that allowed Argentina's richest families to move $140 billion in private wealth into foreign bank accounts, more than either the GDP or the foreign debt. As Argentina's wealth disappeared, the collective amnesia of the Menem years wore off. Today, almost 20 years after the dictatorship ended, the ghosts of the 30,000 disappeared have suddenly reappeared. In the courts and on the streets, a national debate has erupted, not only about how so many had got away with murder, but also about what the reasons why the terror had occurred. In whose interest were they killed? And what was the connection between those deaths and the free market policies that had failed the country so spectacularly? The junta did more than disappear union organisers. The great success of the dirty war was the culture of fear and individualism that it left behind in the neighbourhoods. The generals understood that the true obstacle to complete social control was not leftist rebels, but the very presence of tight-knit communities and civil society, which is why they set out to disappear the public sphere. Well, we have to leave it there, but the other countries such as Uruguay followed similar course, and we see parallels in the USA and our neighbour, Australia, today. The 1994 Mexican crisis was the first challenge to this neoliberal project, with a major international protest by the Zapatistas in the Chiapas Highlands. Since then, resistance has accelerated with the mobilisation of the landless in Brazil, the indigenous movements of peasants in Ecuador and Bolivia, massive public strikes in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Honduras, and the Argentinazo, the popular revolution in Argentina. The Porto Alegre social forums in Brazil have provided the most important focal point for cooperation and networking. However, the initial victory of neoliberalism was tied to the dismantling of the left by the dictatorships. And Latins, now that they're losing their fear and demanding democracy and transparency once again. On New Year's Day this year, in Chiapas, the 9th anniversary of NAFTA, 20,000 indigenous protesters marched through the streets, wearing masks and bandanas, armed with machetes, and holding aloft handmade signs. Zapatista farmers and rural villagers are rising up in resistance. Zapatista leaders denounce NAFTA and rural poverty, as well as biopiracy, the theft and patenting of native resources, the transgenic pollution, the contamination of Mexico's traditional corn varieties, etc., etc. 1,000 miles to the north, Mexican farmers organise a parallel protest blocking the US-Mexico border in Ciudad Juarez. Once self-sufficient in food production, Mexico now spends 78% of its oil exports to purchase food imports from the US. Desperate to defuse the mounting crisis, Mexican President Vicente Fox has promised to renegotiate the NAFTA agreement. We wait. In Brazil, we have a rather die fighting than die of hunger. This year's World Social Forum at Porto Alegre, the third in the row, acquired special significance due to the resounding victory of Luiz Inácio da Silva, Lula, in Brazil's elections. The World Social Forum promotes an alternative world order, one that is sustainable, one that cares for the real needs of workers and the environment. At Porto Alegre, in the southern state of Brazil, is an example where elected representatives have devolved powers back to the community. A new world is possible with wide public support, and Brazil's new president is passionately committed to social reform. Lula has cancelled an order for military aircraft. The transport minister has frozen highway construction. The environment minister is preparing new policies on the Amazon rainforest. The minister of agrarian reform is an ally of the militant landless peasant movement. And the new administration embraces new thinking and innovative policy proposals ranging from acclaimed Bolsa Escuela programs of the education minister to new models of sustainable development. The debate begun in Porto Alegre is becoming mainstream in Brazil. Brazil's largest city is buzzing with excitement and a sense of new beginnings and opportunities to forge a new model of development beyond the Washington consensus. And many believe that Lula will bring about a dramatic change in the heart to the whole region. But a word of caution as Monsanto tries to get its way in Brazil. Venezuela, just a brief mention of Venezuela. We had the election of the first Latin president opposed to neoliberalism, Hugo Chavez. Gregory Palast wrote the following from Caracas earlier this year. Here is a guy, he said, look, I've got a nation where millions of people are living in cardboard houses. We're raising the price of oil. I'm taking over OPEC. I'm putting it back together, and I'm going to take that money and rebuild the ghettos of Caracas, which he did. And that cost money, which he got by doubling the royalties on foreign corporations taking out the oil. They were getting 16% royalties, and he rose that to 30%. The response for the Bush administration was to get the guy kidnapped, and our ambassador, a political toady named Charles Shapiro, ran down from the US embassy to put his arm around the guys who held the president of the country, the Democratic elected president of the country hostage. It is difficult for people to find truthful information about what is happening in Venezuela. The media scream that the country is splitting apart, that the economy is in dire straits, that the people are turning against Hugo Chavez. One Venezuela resembles middle class. I'll better leave that out. I think we haven't had enough time. But the US-backed coup failed because of the strength and will of the people and the military rank and file. In December, they started the strike, but the only shops that closed were US corporations and large chains, McDonald's and Nestle's. The Venezuelan economy had been affected by the strike. Oil production descended from 3 million barrels to 150,000 and has now risen again. But the failure of this economic sabotage has made the opposition, the other Venezuela, and the US ruling class even more desperate, with lies being generated by the media becoming more and more fantastic. At one pro-Chavez demonstration, a television news crew stood right next to the demonstrators and then reported it as an anti-Chavez demonstration. So when you're watching TV, what they say is one thing, maybe exactly the opposite. But the Chavistas are responding by mobilising to defend the Bolivian revolution. And finally, just the revolution in Argentina. We'll have to finish with that, I think. President Lula, in December 2001, announced a state of siege to the people of Argentina. How did they respond? A few people suddenly thought of hitting their saucepans, a traditional thing. But this time it expanded to the streets, into the suburbs, through the whole city. It came a cacerolazo. In 1 hour, a million people challenged the state of siege with cries of, "Que se vayan, get them out!" In the rubble that was left of Argentina after December 2001, Naomi Klein reports that something extraordinary started to happen. Neighbours poked their heads out of the apartments and houses, and in the absence of a political leadership or party to make sense of the explosion of which they were part, they began to talk to each other, to think together. Many of their first assemblies were more like group therapy than political meetings. Participants spoke about the experience of isolation in a city of 11 million. Academics and shopkeepers apologised for not watching out for each other. Soup kitchens were opened, job banks and trading clubs formed. In the past year, 130 to 150 factories bankrupt and abandoned have been taken over by their workers and turned into cooperatives and collectors. Tractor plants, supermarkets, printing houses, aluminium factories, etc., etc. Decisions are now made in open assemblies and profits are split equally among workers. In recent months, the Fabricadas Tomadas literary taking factories have begun to network among themselves and organising in a solidarity economy. Just to finish, because I know we're running out of time, with a quote from Eduardo Galeano, author of The Open Veins of Latin America. "We cannot take communion from the altar of a dominant culture which confuses price with value and converts people and countries into merchandise. The rejection of the present political class with the cry of que se vayan, away with them all, can lead to new solutions, a la Porto Alegre. The people are demanding a participatory and transparent democracy not run by American corporates. Today, another world is possible, otro mundo es posible. Stop the war in Colombia, support Bolivianization in Venezuela, support boycotts against American corporations." Thank you very much.